The flower dies and the bush upon which it grows may appear to die, yet the roots continue to enclose the life principle which causes the bush to grow again, and which has its genesis in these roots, and is the same life that originally existed in the bush. Pluck up the bush by the roots and expose them to the elements until they die and commence to disintegrate, and then replant them, and you will find they will not grow, for the reason that the life which had animated them has departed. And the same conclusions will be reached when you apply the same investigation and reasoning to every species of the vegetable kingdom. The grain of corn, though apparently dead, is in reality not dead, but continues to contain the life principle which was the cause of the growth of the stalk and the blade and the ear and the blade. Nothing of the vegetable kingdom will be reproduced or form the basis of a new growth, unless some part of the old growth retains in it the life force. In man's investigation of the wonders of vegetable life, he has discovered that a grain of corn that had been entombed in the hands of an Egyptian mummy for more than 3,000 years, when planted in the ground, reproduced the Paget Messages 1916, stalk and blade and ear of corn, just as the original material body had produced. And why? Not because when the grain of corn was planted in the earth it received unto itself new life or any force that was not already in it, but because the grain had never ceased to be without the life that existed in it as it grew from the original seed to the perfect grain. The grain had never lost its life and had never died, though apparently it had. Always there was some part of the original body that continued to exist and that held enclosed in itself the life principle. Without the preservation of some part of the original body there could never have been the manifestation of the life that caused the growth of that body. This phenomena, as you call it, was not the resurrection of a material body that had died and become disintegrated and non-existent, but it was merely the resurrection of that part of the old body that had never died, but had always retained in it the life principle. And this, I say, is no argument for the future existence of man, as viewed from a purely material aspect. When the body of a man dies it is eternally destroyed, either by natural decay or by incineration or, sometimes, by cannibals, so that no portion of his body remains in which the life principle may be preserved, and so far as the material body is involved, it utterly disappears. No roots remain in the ground and no grain or seed of it is preserved from which a new body may arise. So I say, the phenomena of the vegetable apparently dying and, after a season springing forth again, and producing a body similar to the one that had formerly lived and died, furnishes no demonstration or argument from which, logically, can be drawn the conclusion that when a man dies, he will not cease to exist, or will live again. From the purely material standpoint, the materialist has the better of the argument, and he may well ask the question, when a man dies shall he live again? And answer the inquiry by saying, nature furnishes no proof that he will. It may be said that life permeates all nature and is the basis of all existence, and that assertion is true, but it does not follow from that any particular manifestation of life, such as the individual man, when once ceasing to manifest, will again be reproduced in that particular identity of material manifestation, or in that form or existence that will make itself the identical being that had ceased to exist. So to show man that there is a continuous existence after the death of the body, and I mean an individual, identical existence, something more 356, is required than the argument of analogy in nature, or to the material things of nature in which life appears and then apparently disappears and then reappears. As the discussion on this phase of the matter will require more time than you have tonight to receive it, I will defer the treatment until later. With all my love I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, Samuel. March 22, 1916 I am here, Jesus. I will give you the prayer very soon now, and you will receive with it a spiritual enlightenment of its meaning that will draw you very close to the Father and His love. Refers now to Morgan. Yes, I speak to him sometimes, and he hears my voice, and is not mistaken, but he must not think that all the impressions that he has are from the spirits, for such is not true. As he progresses in the development of clairaudience he will be able to distinguish between what comes to him from the spirits and what may arise in his own mind. He must not be discouraged or let doubt enter his soul, for his faith must be one of soul and not of mere mind. I have selected him to do a work in reference to the spreading of my truths, and he must determine that his mission is one that will occupy his time during the balance of his earthly existence, and if he now draws back from this work he will lose a wonderful opportunity for helping mankind and for developing his own soul and fitting himself for a happy existence in the spirit world. He has been favored as few mortals have been, or will be, and he must realize and appreciate that fact, for it is a fact, and only the celestial spirits who are with me in this work know the importance of it. I am his friend and brother, as I have told him, and he is my love and influence as few mortals have ever had, and this because I know that he is a true man and will not fail me in what I wish to accomplish. I know that many times it has been said and written by mediums that I have come and written to them. But such is not the truth, and it is only since I have determined that you shall receive my written messages of the truth, have I come in such close contact with you. Often have I tried to influence them with my love and thoughts, but not for long years have I come in such close rapport as to have them receive my written messages or hear my voice audibly, as your friend has heard it, and will hear it in the future. The Paget Messages 1916. Yes, I have chosen him just as positively, and with the certainty as I chose my disciples when on earth, and I expect that he will follow me as faithfully as they followed me. As time passes, the conviction will grow stronger and stronger that he has been selected for my work, and there will come to him a knowledge and power which he does not now realize, and which it is impossible for him at this time to understand. After you and he have gotten in the condition when you can let your thoughts of earthly necessities cease to trouble you, and become in that state of mind and soul that will enable you to turn all your thoughts and longings to the Father and the work that he desires you both to do, there will come to you such a blessing from the Holy Spirit that will prove to you that the Pentecost of the days of my disciples has again been given to man to bless and make him pure and powerful, and the wonder of his fellow mortals. I, Jesus, tell you this with the authority and knowledge that have been given me by the Father, and no man can gainsay it. I have spoken, and you both must believe. So, my dear brother and friend and disciple, I will stop, and in doing so, say that you and your friend have the love and blessings of him who never makes a mistake or misleads his disciples in the things of the soul. Good night, your brother and friend, Jesus. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Oh, my dear one, what a message you had from the Master, and with what power and authority he wrote you. Again, he displayed the great glory of which I have written, and so grand and magnificent was his appearance that we could scarcely look upon him. He certainly was the Son of the Father as he wrote to you and declared that you both were his disciples, and that power and great soul development would be given you. And Ingersoll was present, and he stood in amazement, and almost adoration, as he saw the wondrous greatness and power of the Master. He says that no spirit can doubt that Jesus is the true Son of God and the greatest of all the spirits in the heavens, and that he feels that he is of such insignificance when he sees the glory displayed by the Master. He, Ingersoll, is so humble and so remorseful when he thinks of his days on earth, when he doubted that Jesus ever lived, and if he did, that, in his opinion, he was merely a good man and nothing more. 357. I tell you that the opportunities which we spirits have had, now three times, to see displayed this wonderful glory and power of Jesus, have made us all realize that the love of the Father which Jesus has is beyond all conception, and he tells us that such love may be ours if we will only strive and pray for it. Oh, my dear, when I think of the great favor that has been bestowed upon you, I thank the Father with all the capacity that I have. I am so happy. Someday you will be with me, and this happiness will be ours together. Well, dear, this has been a glorious night, and I will not mar the happiness that comes to us by attempting to write of anything else. So, with all my love and many kisses, I am your own true and loving, Helen. March 23, 1916. I am here, Jesus. I am here according to promise, and desire to write you on a subject that all men should be acquainted with. How the divine love enters into the soul of a man. As I have told you before, man is a creature of God, having a body, spirit and soul. All these are necessary to make the perfect man. But these three parts of man are different in their characteristics and functions, and are separate and distinct, and have qualities that are unlike in their composition as well as in the duration of their existence. The body, as you and all men know, has an existence which lasts only during the life of the mortal on earth, and after that life ends, dissolves into its elements, which no more can form the same body either in the mortal world or in the spirit world, for these elements are merely things of matter and may be and are used to form other bodies and manifestations of the material of nature, not necessarily in the form of human beings, for they enter into other forms both animal and vegetable, and are so disseminated that never again will they become parts of a resurrected body. Your orthodox do not teach this truth, but think in some mysterious way that the mortal body will sometime be resurrected. No, the body when it has performed its function of maintaining and shielding the soul and spirit of man during his earth life, is no longer and cannot thereafter be a part of that man, and may be considered as something that is no longer a part of him. This body though, as a matter of fact, even during the life of the mortal is not the same body during that life, for continually is the changes in, the Paget Messages 1916, the elements that compose that body, and one element or set of elements, gives place to others and becomes lost or absorbed in the great sea of elements that help form or constitute the universe of God. By operation of the laws of attraction and repulsion, these elements, as they replace others which disappear, conform themselves to the general appearance or outline of the parent body, so that the identity of the body as well as of its appearance is preserved, and as a man grows older, the laws which make the changes in his appearance cause these new elements to conform to these changes, so that, even while the material continues to envelop the spirit during the short span of a man's life, yet that material is not the same for any length of time. I make this preliminary statement merely to show that the material part of man is not at all connected with the real man, so far as the persistent nature of him is concerned, and this material need not be considered in discussing the subject that I desire to write about. The spirit part of man is that part which contains what may be called the functions of life and the force and power existing in him and which immediately control him in his conduct and living. This real, existing principle of life, unlike the body, never dies, but continues to live after the spirit drops its envelope of flesh. This spirit part of man contains the seat of the mental faculties and reasoning powers, and uses the organs of the material body to manifest these attributes. These faculties live and exist, even though the physical body may be in such imperfect condition that the spirit may not be able to make its manifestations in such a way as to enable the mortal to perceive or sense the material things of nature, as they are called. To be specific, even though the material organs of sight may become impaired or destroyed, yet in that spirit body, which is within the physical body, exists the actual sight just as perfectly and completely as if these impaired or destroyed organs were doing their functioning. And the same is true as regards the hearing and the others of what are called the five senses of man. And as to the reasoning faculties and mental qualities, they exist in the perfect state whether the brain is healthy or not, or whether it performs its work or refuses to do so. These qualities do not depend upon the soundness or perfect workings of the organs of the physical body in order that these spirit qualities may exist in a perfect condition, but the proper workings of the physical organs, or rather the proper and natural movements and 358 manifestations of the brain, and the conscious operations of the mental faculties, do depend upon the spirit faculties being able to use these physical organs in a proper way and in accordance with the harmony of the creation of the relative and correlative parts of man. These spirit faculties, which man calls the intellect and the five senses, are a part of the spirit body which is enclosed in the material body and which in turn encloses the soul. When the material body dies, the spirit body continues to exist and live on in the world of spirit, and with it and as continuing parts of it. These intellectual faculties, performing all their functions free from the limitations that the physical organs placed upon them. And when this change takes place, these mental qualities, notwithstanding that they have not the material organs through which they functioned when in the mortal frame, can conceive thoughts of things material and hear and see things of the material just as they did, and even more perfectly, when they were enveloped by the environments of flesh and blood. So you see, when the mortal dies, the only thing that dies and is left behind is the mere physical body, and with the spirit body survives all those things which can be said to be the real man, so far as the mind is concerned. Hence, man never ceases to remember and to progress and to know that he is a being which death cannot destroy or change into something that he was not before death came to him. And thus I answer the question, when a man dies, shall he live again? He never ceases to live, and his living is not a new life, but merely the continuation of the old life with all the things of mind and conscience that were his in the old life. In the purely spirit life, the spirit body continues to contain the soul and will be its protector and covering so long as that spirit body shall last. But this body then begins to change, and by disintegration into what we may call spirit elements, and the formation of new elements to replace the disappearing ones. This change in this body is not caused by the same laws that operated to change and disintegrate and replace the physical body, but by the law controlling the development of the soul which the spirit body contains. The soul is the real man because it is the only thing or part of man that may become immortal, the only part of man that was made in the image of its creator, and the only part of man that may become a part of the substance of its maker and partake of his divine nature. I say may, for that is an important part of this great possibility. I know, the Paget Messages 1916, this possibility of the soul becoming immortal by partaking of the divine nature of God is true, for it is a proven fact in the case of many souls who are now in the celestial heavens. I also know that there are many souls in the spirit world, who have been there for many centuries, who have never received this divine nature and consciousness of immortality. Whether such souls who have not received this divine nature shall become or are immortal has never been demonstrated. This I do know, that in the economy of God's plan for the forming of his kingdom, at some time, when, I don't know, this privilege of partaking of his divine nature and the certainty of immortality will be withdrawn from the souls of men and spirits, and then, whether these souls who suffer this condemnation will partake of immortality, no spirit knows, only God. There are other things that I know and hear tell you, and among them is this, that so long as the soul does not receive this divine nature, the mind, which I have described as being a part of the spirit body, continues to exist and dominates both soul and body, and in its progress it may attain to a condition of purity and perfection such as were possessed by the first created living souls, our first parents. Many spirits now are in this condition, but yet are mere men, and their souls remain only in the image of God, nothing more. While God is mind, mind is not God, and also while God is spirit, spirit is not God. So that when men teach that mind is God, and that men must seek to attain to that mind, and thus become like God, they fall far short of the truth. The mind is only an attribute of God, and beyond and back of that mind is the real God, the personality, and that is soul, from which emanates all these attributes and manifestations which mortals as well as spirits may be conscious of. But while God is soul, yet that soul is a thing of substance with a nature divine, and the seat and fountainhead of all the great attributes that belong to him, such as love and power and life and omniscience and mercy. And here I must state one fact which may startle those who believe and teach that mind is God, and that is, that which is called the human mind is not a part of the mind of God, for this human mind and all its faculties and wonderful qualities are mere special creatures just as are the spirit body and material body of man. As I have said, man was created in the image of God only as regards the soul, and here always bear in mind that the creation was only an image. The mind of man was a special creation, just as were the minds of the lower animals, differing only in degree. And if God had not given to man a soul and the spirit body to envelop it, and in which he placed this mind of man, when man died the death of the physical body, that would have been the end of him, as such death is of the body, which is not a part of this soul image of God. As I have heretofore written you, when God created man and made him in his own image as to the soul, he also gave to man the possibility of obtaining the substance of the Father, that is, of having that soul which was a mere image become that soul which is of the substance of the Creator. I have also explained to you how man, by his disobedience, lost that possibility, and for long centuries was deprived of this great privilege, and how it was again restored to him at the time of my coming to earth, so that he now and for 19 centuries past has had the possession of this great gift or privilege of partaking of the substance of the Father. Well, when man, by the way that has been pointed out to him, becomes possessed of the substance of the Father's divine nature, even in an initial degree, his soul commences to change and lose its character as a mere image, and to progress towards the attainment of that condition when this image disappears and the divine substance takes its place. And as the progress continues, he receives so much of the substance that his soul takes on the divine nature of the Father, and his atonement with the Father becomes so perfect that he becomes an inhabitant of the Father's kingdom. This occurs when he becomes fitted to enter the first celestial sphere. And just here occurs another thing which may startle those who teach that the mind is the essence of God, and that, is that, the mind which man, both as mortal and spirit, possesses up to that point in the progress of the soul where the transformation into the divine nature takes place, becomes a thing of naught, or rather becomes absorbed in the mind of the soul, which is the real mind of the Father. And then and ever after, only this mind of the soul is that which enables the real divine man to understand the things of God, to help him in his progress. I will continue later. You are tired. But remember that I love you and you have me with you at all times to help and sustain and comfort you. Good night, my dear brother, your friend and brother, Jesus. 359, The Paget Messages 1916. I am here, Sirik. Well, you can't lose me, as the boys say, for I have your wife on my side, and I think that we can beat you and Dr. Stone, although you are two of a kind. Well, my dear friend, I want to write just a little as I have not written you for some time, and you know the great pleasure it gives us in exchanging a few thoughts. I am very happy, and so is Rose, who is here, and says that you are her next soulmate when I get divorced from her, but I will tell you privately, don't depend on that. I am progressing and am with her so much oftener than formerly, and I also have a greater opportunity to be with your folks. I will come soon and write you about something that I have found to be true since I have been a spirit, and which I know you will like to hear of. How is my friend the doctor? He looks as if he might be very happy, and if he could see that little soulmate of his, I know he would be. Well, you two had the advantage of me on earth, because you knew more of this divine love than I did, but I am ahead of you now, for I have my soulmate right here with her arms around my neck, giving me a kiss occasionally, and I know it. And your soulmates say that your two have their arms around your necks too, and they know that sometimes you realize it. Well, I am glad that we can have our little jokes together. Oh, what a difference from what I expected. I thought that when I came over I would either be helping in building fires or riding on clouds, playing harps. But believe me, I would sit as I am with Rose telling me all the sweet things that she does. I must stop now, and with my love and that of Rose, will say, good night. Your old friend, Frank D. Sirik. I am here, Saul Les Henkel, let me say just a word, for while you are all having your love thoughts passing, I would like to come in too. I was your old friend, Saul Les Henkel, and while I was not so young as you folks when on earth, yet, now I am younger than you, and no doubt better looking. But seriously, I have enjoyed being here this evening, and listening to the messages that you have received. Of course, I never knew your spirit friends on earth, but over here, I have become acquainted with them through that beautiful wife of yours, and I enjoy their companionship very 360. Much, especially that of Mrs. Stone, who is so beautiful and full of a divine love, and such a tender, loving mother. I am also very fond of the little girl that your Helen calls Lovesick. Well, she undoubtedly is in love, but she doesn't look sick, and is just as bright and beautiful and happy as one can imagine. She does love her soulmate though, and doesn't hesitate to let us all that know the fact. How happy all your friends are, and how happy I am to be with them. Over here, there are little circles of friends, Just as on Earth and there is a difference also in the natures and disposition of those who form the circles. I want to say that your soulmate and that of the doctor are two of the cheeriest little spirits that I know. Yes, I have met her and she is not very happy. She has the belief that held me back so long, and little soul development. I have tried to help her, but it is hard to make her think differently from what she did on Earth. But sooner or later it will come about, that she will receive the truth. She is not my soulmate, so your wife says, and she seems to know all about soulmates. She says that she will soon tell me who mine is, and I will be glad of it. I must not write more, but thank you very much for your kindness. Your old friend, General S.S. Henkel. I am here, Mary. I am here and I want to write to my soulmate and I know that you will let me do so. Helen said she would make you take the pencil and told me to get ready and catch hold and as soon as you did so, and you may depend on it that I was right here and grabbed the pencil as soon as I could. Well, it has been so long since I wrote him that I was hungry to do so. I know that he writes me and that I make him realize that I am with him, but that doesn't satisfy me altogether for you know that when you love a person you just have to tell them. It really gives relief, and besides I know that he likes to have me tell him. Well, I suppose he will not think it anything new when I say that I love him with all my heart and soul but nevertheless I must tell him for I do. If I could only write to him as your sweetheart does to you, it would not occasion so much anxiety from then I could spread it out and not have to wait to bunch it all together. But it keeps and I don't lose any of it. Tell him that I am progressing very rapidly now and will soon get into a sphere where Helen tells me I will find so much more happiness, the Paget Messages 1916, and that the more love of the Father that I get, the more I will love my soulmate. I am with him a great deal as I have told him before. I try my best to help him. He is developing in his soul also and I am glad. I must tell him what a love feast we three had last night. I mean Helen and Clara and I. When we heard Jesus say that Mr. Morgan had been selected by Jesus and would be given the great love of the Father and knowing that you and my dear had already been selected, we just hugged one another and shed tears of joy for to us who know what a wonderful spirit the Master is and especially having seen the great display of his glory, we thought how fortunate we were in having soulmates who had been so favored by Jesus and the Father. You cannot appreciate what it means to us for you don't know conditions here and what power and love exists not only in the celestial heavens but in the spirit heavens. Oh, I tell you that if we were mortals and you were our husbands on earth, we should have such a pride as might condemn us to do penance. You must all believe what has been told you as to the work which you are to do and thank the Father for the great opportunity that will be given you to do so much good to mankind and to develop your own soul. For we know that if you do the work we will not be separated very long. I am so happy tonight I could not talk about anything else and Leslie must pardon me for not having written about other things. Soon I will come to him and tell him about my home here, and what he may expect when he comes over. I have written him a long letter and I must stop. So with my sisterly love for you and my soulmate love to him, I will say good night. His Mary. I am here. Father of Leslie. I desire to write just a line, before my son leaves. I am his father and I want him to know that I have not forgotten to take advantage of any opportunity to write that may arise. His mother is here too, and she sends her love to him and desires to say that she heard the message which Mary wrote him, and that she is the happiest little angel in all the spirit world. And we are all happy and know that what has been told him is true. He must not doubt even though he cannot now realize the possibility of performing this great mission of which he has been called by 361, the Master. In time he will be instructed and will have sufficient power given him to do this work. I say we are all happy because of this great favor. Your mother says that she is thankful beyond all expression, that her prayers have been answered so surprisingly, that she never for one moment imagined that her boy would have been made the instrument in doing this work, that she only prayed, that he might receive this divine love and become at one with the Father. And when this other surprising favor came to him, she realized that God was very good to her beyond all conception. Tell my boy that he must believe and try his best to perform this work, that I am sure that a way will be opened up by which he will be enabled to do this duty, for now it is a duty. I am very happy, and the more I progress the greater my happiness becomes and the goodness of the Father appears. His sisters are very happy too and rejoice with us all.